violence, economic circumstances, poverty, and also climate change, drought, extreme weather. Their ways of life have just become unlivable in a lot of the places they're leaving. And
so
you know,
often
no
caused
really,
by the countries they are fleeing to that are trying to prevent them from coming in.
Exactly. And a lot of them don't want to leave. You know, they don't want to leave their communities, their homes, their parents, their children. And yet they do. You know, it's astounding to me the extent to which people risk their lives to get to Europe, only to die or be turned away.
Alexis Okeowo, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Staff writer for The New Yorker and author. Their latest piece for The New Yorker is headlined, The Crisis of Missing Migrants. What has become of the tens of thousands of people who've disappeared on their way to Europe? We'll link to it at democracynow.org. And a fond farewell to our remarkable video fellow, Mary Conlon. Thank you for all you've contributed to at Democracy Now! It's always been an honor to work with you. Now you are forever a part of our DNA. That's Democracy Now! Alumni. And that does it for our show, Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Geisler, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Werner, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen. I'm Amy Goodman. Thank you so much.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KABU, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing, unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kabu.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
Coming up on the KABU Evening News, Oregon viral infection rates fall as the health authority issues recommendations for new COVID strain.
A series of deadly tornadoes devastates the southeastern United States.
And environmental groups push for endangered species protections for Chinook salmon.
Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Friday, January 13th, 2023. I'm Ashley Mackey.
And I'm Josh Salem. Infections from the flu, RSV, and COVID-19 appear to have either peaked or are dropping in Oregon. RSV rates have improved the most, with hospitalizations rapidly decreasing. The Oregon Health Authority said the rates of influenza remain high, but the flu has passed its peak for adults. Numbers are expected to decline. COVID-19 hospitalizations increased in November and remain high. They have also dropped in the last week. Despite the improving situation, hospitals are still struggling, especially due to staffing shortages. Wait times may be longer, and patients may get their care in unusual places, such as a chair in the hallway, rather than in an individual room. Staff are exhausted and are getting sick themselves. The Oregon Health Authority has been streamlining hiring processes so retired nurses and staff from out of state can quickly get to work. But nurses and healthcare professionals at Kaiser Permanente in Oregon and Southwest Washington filed a notice of an intent to picket Sunnyside Medical Center based partly on critically low staffing levels. Oregon Health and Science University's COVID-19 model predicts a small increase in hospitalizations in the coming month because of the latest version of the Omicron variant. The forecast anticipates about a 7% jump. The new variant is nicknamed Kraken, and it has been spreading rapidly across the northeast part of the country. While this variant does appear to be the most transmissible COVID-19 seen so far, there's no evidence yet that it's associated with a more severe illness. The Oregon Health Authority does recommend people with reduced immunity wear masks and avoid crowds. Oregon State Epidemiologist Dr. Dean Seidlinger said, quote, "As we begin 2023, I am hopeful for the situation we are facing," end quote.
A deadly storm system spawned tornadoes across parts of the U.S. South, killing at least 7 people and causing substantial damage in one Alabama city. Nationwide, the Weather Service issued more than 40 separate tornado reports yesterday, and 7 southern states had tornado warnings. 6 died northeast of Selma, Alabama, where a tornado cut a 20-mile-long path through 2 rural communities. In Selma, the city council met on a sidewalk using lights from cell phones to declare a state of emergency. Around 40 homes were destroyed or seriously damaged, including several mobile homes that were launched into the air. At least 12 people were injured severely enough to be taken to hospitals by emergency responders. Crews cut through downed trees all night to look for more people needing help. Early this morning, tens of thousands of customers remained without power across Alabama and Georgia. 3 factors caused yesterday's tornado outbreak to be unusual and damaging: a natural La Niña weather cycle, climate change-induced warming in the Gulf of Mexico, and decades-long eastward shift of tornado activity.
TriMet has stabilized their driver shortage, officials say, as the agency looks to expand service into the future. That doesn't mean TriMet is back to its pre-pandemic service level, but it can sustain the reduced service it's been providing. The transportation agency made cuts to bus lines in January and September of 2020, citing driver shortages. TriMet spokesperson Tia York told the Portland Mercury that the agency doesn't plan to reverse cuts in service it made last year. But they do have 969 drivers, which is nearly 70 more than needed to drive the current schedule. York said the shortage was helped by pay increases and a $7,500 hiring bonus. TriMet has also released its 2023-2024 service plan, which will cancel some low ridership bus routes and reroute others. They also plan to upgrade 5 bus lines to frequent service and expand half-hour service for many more lines. Forums for community feedback on the new service plan start next week.
Federal unfair labor practice charges against grocery chain New Seasons could mean a new unionization vote for workers at the Orenco Station store. The National Labor Relations Board, or NLRB, determined that there was enough evidence to make a case for unfair labor practices against New Seasons. A hearing is scheduled for April 18th. Workers voted against unionizing in September, but the United Food and Commercial Workers Union says the ballot count was illegally influenced. Workers were allegedly told by the CEO that they would lose benefits and rewards in the event the employees unionized. Local 555 President Dan Clay said, quote, "The ballot count was affected by the unfair labor practices the company committed in the election process. New Seasons must be held accountable for threatening and lying to workers. Failure to do so undermines both these workers and the principle that workers deserve rights in their workplace," end quote. A spokesperson for New Seasons said of the matter, quote, "New Seasons Market disagrees that it engaged in any alleged unlawful conduct described in the NLRB complaint. In the upcoming hearing on these matters, we look forward to further demonstrating that New Seasons Market acted in a lawful manner and that overturning the election is not warranted," end quote. If the NLRB decides in favor of the union in this case, they could have another chance to redo their union election.
Groups focused on issues facing Washington State's aging population gathered to discuss their priorities for the 2023 legislative session. Accessibility to long-term care is one of their top priorities. Eric Tegetoff has more on the story.
With the state legislative session underway, a coalition that advocates for older Washingtonians gathered on Thursday to discuss priorities for 2023. The Age Wave Coalition Breakfast in Olympia focused on the issues that families and the state face with a rapidly aging population. One speaker was Democratic State Representative Steve Theringer, a longtime member of the Joint Legislative Executive Committee on Aging and Disability Issues. He says the long-term benefits program, known as the WA Cares Fund, will be on the docket this session. The program was paused over concerns that some people might pay into it but not receive its benefits.
It's just a huge need because a lot of folks, as they retire, haven't been able to save enough money. So this structured savings program, which is really dedicated to long-term care needs, will be very helpful.
Under the WA Cares program, workers will pay 58 cents for every $100 they make and have access to up to $36,500 to pay for care services when they retire. Implementation was supposed to start at the beginning of the year, but was delayed until July 1st. Theringer says one of the WA Cares benefits is that it can be used to pay family caregivers. To ensure people can age in place in their homes, caregivers will play a critical role. He says it's a good thing these services are becoming seen as more professional potential career paths.
The aging population is going to grow, and the younger population, the workforce, is going to shrink. So you've got to make sure that being a caregiver or a caregiving aide is attractive to folks.
Thursday's breakfast brought together a wide range of groups, including the Washington Association of Area Agencies on Aging, AARP Washington, and organizations representing workers and rights for people with disabilities. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Environmental groups are pushing for Chinook salmon to be listed as an endangered species. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA Fisheries, are considering a request submitted in August of 2022 to address a decades-long decrease in Chinook populations from their native habitats. That includes populations on the Oregon coast and further south along the Oregon-California border. Petitioners are focusing on risks to spring-run salmon. Unlike fall-run salmon, spring-run live in rivers during the summer where they experience pollution, hot water temperatures, and habitat disruption. Chinook salmon used to be found in nearly all watersheds along the Oregon and Northern California coastal range. Today, at least three Chinook salmon populations have completely disappeared. In previous years, NOAA denied a request to separate spring-run salmon for their own conservation considerations. They are considering listing the whole species as endangered because of the risk to spring-run salmon. NOAA is currently reviewing the petition and will submit a decision by early August.
Attorney General Merrick Garland appoints a special counsel to review documents found in President Joe Biden's former Delaware office. And newly appointed Congressman George Santos responds to calls for him to resign after it was revealed he lied extensively during his campaign. With these stories and more, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I signed an order appointing Robert Herr a special counsel for the matter I've just described. The document authorizes him to investigate whether any person or entity violated the law in connection with this matter.
Attorney General Merrick Garland appointed a special counsel to investigate classified documents found in President Joe Biden's possession. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy says Congress will also investigate following the recovery of the documents at the president's former office and his home in Delaware.
Another faux pas by the Biden administration, but treating law differently based upon your political beliefs. Treats one President Trump one way, but treats President Biden a whole different way.
McCarthy called out the Justice Department for the handling of how the search of former President Donald Trump's home was executed compared to President Biden's. Biden said the American public knows how seriously he takes classified documents and highlighted his administration's willingness to work with the Justice Department.
I'm going to get a chance to speak on all this, God willing, soon. But as I said earlier this week, people, and by the way, my Corvette's in a locked garage, okay? So it's not like you're sitting out in the street.
Newly sworn in New York Republican Representative George Santos continues to face escalating calls for his resignation amid scrutiny over lies told during his campaign and says he would do so under special circumstances.
142 people asked for me to resign, I'll resign.
Santos later clarified he would resign if the more than 142,000 people of his New York 3rd Congressional District wanted him to. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says it's clear to him Santos is not fit to serve in Congress.
Well, the spectacle that is George Santos speaks for itself. He's a complete and total fraud.
President Biden celebrated the news Thursday that inflation fell for the first time in more than 2 years and credits his economic policies for the drop. According to the Labor Department, inflation eased to 6.5% in December. While consumer prices remain high, the president said the rate at which they're increasing has diminished. According to the latest data from 538's aggregation of polls, President Biden's approval rating has reached its highest point since October 2021 at 44.1%. Nebraska Republican Governor Jim Pollen announced Thursday he would appoint former Governor Pete Ricketts to the U.S. Senate following Ben Sasse's departure earlier this week. Finally, on her first day in office, Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders banned the term Latinx from official use in the state government. Latinx is a gender-neutral alternative to Hispanic and Latino. Some say it's the latest move of the anti-woke agenda GOP leaders are pursuing. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 7, it's Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a chance of rain, overnight temperatures reaching a low of 47 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with showers, lows in the upper 40s. Today in history, in 1968, Johnny Cash performs live at the Folsom State Prison, helping to cement the association of Cash with the plight of the incarcerated peoples in the American imagination. The quote of the day is from June Carter Cash, who said, "Every dog has its day unless he loses his tail, and then he has a weak end."
Crow Creek Tribal Chairman Len Keek calls upon South Dakota state lawmakers to improve education access for rural communities. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Crow Creek Tribal Chairman says more must be done to bolster education in rural parts of the state. That's one message he brought to lawmakers during the annual State of the Tribes address. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger has more.
Chairman Peter Lenkeek says the state and tribes have a shared responsibility to educate all children in South Dakota. He says several things stand in the way of that, including access to food and educators.
It is common knowledge that South Dakota suffers from a teacher shortage that has forced schools to hire long-term substitutes to educate our children. We need to work cooperatively to find a way so there are enough teachers for all South Dakota schools, whether they are public, tribal, or private.
Lenkeek encourages lawmakers to work with colleges, universities, and the Department of Education to find ways to increase the number of educational staff in the state. South Dakota teacher pay is at 50th in the nation. Representative Tamara St. John is Dakota from Sisseton. The Republican lawmaker says part of the issue is also related to infrastructure, both rural and tribal.
We're very much the same as far as supporting having great teachers. The fact that we don't have housing and the fact that we don't have infrastructure for housing, those things are real. And I can imagine that's true with a lot of the rural areas.
The Republican-controlled legislature is moving fast to place $200 million into a fund for housing grants and low-interest loans. 70% of those dollars will go towards communities with a population of less than 50,000. Crow Creek Chairman Lenkeek also criticized the new social studies standards revisions for the state that were drafted by a professor from a conservative university in Michigan. The draft removed several references to Native American culture from the original. Lenkeek says the state has managed the revision process for years without outside influence and interpretation. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger and Peer.
Interior Secretary Deb Haaland and Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs Brian Newland will hold the next two stops on the Indian Boarding School Road to Healing Tour in Arizona. They'll visit Phoenix and a community on the Navajo Nation January 20th and 22nd. The tour is part of Haaland's investigation into U.S. Indian boarding schools. The stops will provide former students and descendants an opportunity to share boarding school experiences. Shandine Mayo of Fairbanks hopes to be the next Miss Alaska. She's worked as a TV news reporter and is seeking a degree in rural development. Recently, Mayo worked with CBS to raise awareness of the importance of Indigenous representation in media.
I've never really seen myself in media in any other place like that. So I think I would really want to champion narrative change, especially as a voice that is not as heard in the industry.
Mayo is Koyukon, Athabascan, and Navajo. Her platform focuses on bringing a positive narrative for and about her communities.
Rural communities like the one that I grew up in are important and were necessary. I really wanted to share that message and to give hope, and it's really been an exciting process.
Mayo spent the year getting ready for the competition and says she's received much community support. For the evening gown competition, Mayo will be wearing earrings made by artist Deluna Erickson.
And what makes this super special is that these earrings will be reflecting a traditional design, and they'll also be made from natural resources. So I'll be taking my heritage on stage.
This weekend, Mayo will take part in the Miss Alaska competition in Anchorage. The winner will go on to represent Alaska in the Miss USA competition later this year in Reno, Nevada. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
An Indigenous Saskatchewan woman is in court facing accusations she abducted her 7-year-old son. This case occurs in a climate of increased domestic violence in the U.S. and Canada in the aftermath of the COVID-19 pandemic, particularly within Indigenous communities. Statistics Canada, a federal agency monitoring sociological trends, found that 44% of Indigenous women have experienced physical or sexual violence by an intimate partner in their lifetime. With more on this story, here's KBOO's Sherry Morish.
This brings us to Dawn Walker, an author and former CEO of the Federation of Sovereign Indigenous Nations, an organization in Northeast Canada that works to protect Saskatchewan's 74 First Nations. Their focus is largely on maintaining protections of treaties that govern their rights. This includes education, housing, health, and child welfare. They also work to maintain basic human rights like earning a living and economic development. Back in July of 2022, Walker and her son were feared to have drowned in a river south of Saskatoon, where her truck was found abandoned with no sign of her or her 7-year-old son. A missing persons report was filed and authorities in the community set out searching for them. Walker and her son were ultimately found in Oregon City, Oregon, alive in August 2022. On January 5th, 2023, Walker was in court responding to 9 criminal charges in Saskatchewan. Charges included public mischief, child abduction, forging a passport, possessing forged documents, identity theft, and identity fraud. She also faces 2 criminal charges in the U.S., including, quote, allegedly crossing the border with fake identification. Documents revealed that Walker told authorities she faked her own death and that of her son to escape domestic violence. She apologized for any harm she caused family and friends, but told the Canadian Press she was, quote, left with no choice. The Canadian Press went on to report that the son's father denies harming Walker or her son. Walker appeared in court on January 5th, where she pleaded not guilty. She's scheduled to appear in court again on January 16th. For KBOO News, I'm Sherry Morish.
Faculty unions in Florida are fighting a series of proposals by Governor Ron DeSantis' administration to limit the union's strength and remove diversity initiatives. This comes as part of DeSantis' campaign to restrict the teaching of so-called woke ideology in Florida schools. Tramell Gomes has more on the story.
If it's woke, trendy, or has anything to do with race and diversity, it appears Governor Ron DeSantis wants no part of it in Florida. From signing what was dubbed the Stop Woke Act to prohibit teaching certain concepts related to race, the DeSantis administration has now asked state colleges and universities for information about what resources they're putting into activities related to diversity, equity, and inclusion, as well as what some call critical race theory. Matthew Latta, a union chapter president of United Faculty of Florida, says he thinks the governor is following a conservative trend to gain political points, regardless of the outcome or legal challenges.
And they're jumping feet first into this without having thought about what the consequences are. I mean, if you remove offices of diversity, equity, and inclusion, if you stop all of those efforts, you will lose federal grants. And we're talking about not millions, but up into the billions statewide.
DeSantis received applause from supporters during his inaugural address, critical of what he called trendy ideology last week. On Wednesday, a group of college professors asked a federal judge to block the governor's request for spending data on the diversity programs, which was due today. During the holidays, DeSantis took aim at faculty unions, saying he doesn't want union dues deducted from teachers' paychecks, in a move designed to make it harder for labor unions to get funding. Latta says it's short-sighted.
This is not a group of wild-eyed radicals. Most of our members teach in STEM, you know, teach in fields that are supposedly supported by the governor. They appreciate what the union does for them, and we're going to survive. I'd say bring it on, and we'll see what happens.
There are also plans in the legislature to set a threshold for unions to represent teachers, which would involve at least 50% of teachers approving union membership. Similar bills have failed. Latta believes they can meet that challenge if needed. He says when his union was last certified a decade ago, the vote was 90% in favor, even if not all faculty members chose to join. This is Tramell Gomes for Florida News Connection.
Community benefit agreements are helping disadvantaged workers find well-paying, long-term jobs in the growing electric vehicle manufacturing sector. These agreements improve companies' chances of earning public agency contracts by supporting an often overlooked pool of workers. Catherine Carley has more on the story.
As cities and states increase investments in electric vehicles, manufacturing companies hoping to win these contracts are signing community benefit agreements, which ensure workers from non-traditional backgrounds have access to well-paying jobs in the growing field of green manufacturing. The agreements are legally binding and offer companies partnerships with community agencies already working to train and support disadvantaged workers. Hector Wazo, California director with Jobs to Move America, says government agencies are more likely to invest in companies that are investing in their workers' futures.
It's to the company's benefit if they can say, oh, I have a bona fide partnership with community organizations and we have an apprenticeship program. When you buy our buses, you're helping create good U.S. jobs.
Wazo says community benefit agreements have been successful for manufacturing companies like Proterra and BYD. He says New Flyer, the largest bus manufacturer in North America, has also recently agreed to train and employ new workers at their plants in California and Alabama. Community benefit agreements are often signed for large development projects like shopping centers or new sports stadiums and ensure developers work with surrounding communities to create living wage jobs with benefits like paid family leave and health care. Wazo says workers with a history in the criminal justice system or without a college or high school degree are able to gain training and certifications that turn jobs into careers.
We found a lot of success in workers having the opportunity to really turn their lives around and become homeowners or purchase their first car.
Wazo says community benefit agreements also have a larger scale impact. Workers from economically disadvantaged areas often commute long distances to find living wage jobs. Working closer to home, Wazo says, means parents can spend more time with their families. For California News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
Listening to KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 13th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes myself, Josh Salem, and Sherry Morish. The producer is Reed Johnson, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Alex Gonzalez, Tramel Gomes, Catherine Carley, Antonia Gonzalez, and Eric Tegetoff. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available at our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem.
And I'm Ashley Mackey. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, U.S. reporters used to talk, even brag, about telling the truth and letting the chips fall where they may. And more acutely, comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. In other words, about using their special constitutional power to look behind curtains most of us can't and bring us meaningful information we could gain no other way. Not stories that might amuse us, which are